All right, my friends, and welcome back to the podcast. And this episode, I'm taking a short little break from the deconstruction series that I'm doing. But don't worry, never fear, there are more episodes to come on the deconstruction series. I already have one recorded, and I'm in the process of recording two more for this series. I'm going to share some personal stories of how this started for me. And then I have two guests coming on. We're going to talk a little bit about ancient prayer in the early church and how that can help us process our deconstruction. And then the other episode, we're going to dig into hell. All right. But in this episode, I have my new friend, Mary, coming on the podcast. And she's written several books. Most of her books were written to new Christians. But this book that is coming out now called When the Glass Ceiling is Stained is written specifically to Christian women who are serving in ministry or want to serve in ministry. And it's actually the second edition. So she had a first edition, that publisher went out of business, and she is in the process of publishing the second edition. And I'm not really even sure how she and I got connected, but we did, and she wanted me to share my story in her book. And so there'll be a little vignette in there about me and my ministry call and how God has worked through that. And I think there's a couple of other stories of women clergy, modern women clergy, today's era, who are serving and answering the call. So you want to watch for that. Obviously, if you follow me on Instagram or you follow me on Facebook, you'll see me. I will definitely post it when the book is officially published and available to you. So in the meantime, you can hear her talk about it in this episode, and I think you will enjoy it. Have a great day. We've been trying to tell better stories about women and clergy and the church, because we really need to tell better stories. Instead of just complaining about it, what if we flood the airwaves with something different? All right, so you've been writing for a while. I don't think you said that was your degree, right? How did you get started writing?
No, it was not my degree. I have a master's in social work, and I had been working as a psychotherapist for a lot of years. And in 2003, I became involved with Celebrate Recovery while I was still working. In 2005, God called me to write a book about how Celebrate Recovery had helped me. The title of the book, it took me 3 years to write it. I was working full-time. My kids were teenagers, but I finally finished it in 2008. And the book is titled When Therapy Isn't Enough. And it's written from the perspective of being a therapist and being a client in therapy simultaneously. And then later working a recovery program. So in essence, what the book says is that therapy is helpful as far as changing thought patterns and changing behavior patterns, but it can't heal your heart. Only God can heal your heart. And working a Christ-centered 12-step program healed my heart. And that's what that's the essence of that book.
Oh, awesome. Read that one. You gave me a different one to read.
I gave you When Religion Isn't Enough, which I wrote later, about the difference between having religion and having a personal relationship with God. And that like chronicles my journey from growing up Catholic without a relationship, just having a religion, and then, you know, feeling that that wasn't enough, and then learning how to be in relationship with God through Christ. I also did both of the books, all of my books, really, I do a lot of research for. So it's not only my voice speaking, it's other voices that I quote in the books.
Yeah. Did you do self-publishing for your first book?
I've done self-publishing for all of them. I started off with the company I started off with initially. They went out of business in, I think it was 2016 or 2017. And then a friend of mine from church told me about her uncle, who runs a self-publishing company and is also an agent for authors. So I've done my more recent books through him. He worked at Zondervan for many, many years and then left Zondervan and started his own company. So the name of the company is Credo House Publishers, and they're in Michigan, actually. They're in Michigan. And that's who I have been working with since then, but they're all self-published.
Oh, that's interesting. I wasn't quite sure. I know other people who have self-published, but then they kind of work with like small publishing houses, like the Credo, like you're talking about. And I still don't really understand how that all works.
Well, basically, even though I'm working with a publishing company, I'm self-publishing because I pay them to publish the book. I have not been able to get a traditional publisher to take me on because I don't have name recognition, or I don't, in their lingo, I don't have a platform. So I have not been able to get a traditional publisher to take me on. But I still feel, I feel called to write, so I just keep writing and keep self-publishing.
Yeah, I've heard that quite a bit, that it's getting harder and harder to go through a traditional publisher. If you don't have the right platform, either have to self-publish, or even if you do have a smaller publisher, you still have to do all the promoting yourself.
Well, yeah, you have to do all, I have to do all the promoting. And I just, in the beginning, I was going to a lot of book festivals, like all in various states. To be truthful, every single time I went to a book festival, it just sent me more into the red because I didn't sell enough to compensate for the expenses of, to register to be an exhibitor plus the travel expenses. And some of them that were further away involved like overnight hotel stays. And so I've stopped going to book festivals and I just do a lot of online promotion. And I do book giveaways through Goodreads. I do that fairly frequently. Because my goal is not that I'm allergic to money, I am not allergic to money, but my goal is to get the books into the hands of people that want to read them. Hopefully that I can help them or impact their thinking regarding healing, regarding personal relationships with God, regarding salvation. I just want to get the books into the hands of people that need them and want them.
Now we connected over this current book, but the book that you're writing right now is actually a second edition. So you talk a little bit like how did the first edition come about? And then I'd like to learn a little bit about what does the second edition look like how that all happens. I don't know that I've ever heard anybody talk about doing a second edition.
The book that you're talking about, that your story is actually in, is called When the Glass Ceiling is Stained, Who's the Architect? And it came about as a result of that first Celebrate Recovery ministry that I was involved with. I was actually leading it. I was removed from the leadership of that ministry against my will. And I believe that the bottom line of why I was relieved was a gender issue. When I first started, I believe I was called to lead that ministry. And when I first started leading it, I was managing it. And then as I learned about the difference between leading and managing and began more and more to lead it and make decisions regarding the ministry, I was removed from leadership by two of the male pastors and some lay leaders in the congregation. That sent me into a tailspin for a few years. And I wrote that book in reaction to that. And then when the publishing company went out of business and it was no longer in print, I have since that time, I have bumped up against the stained glass ceiling in other churches. None as hurtful as that first time, but I wrote the second edition because in 2014, I believe that God spoke to me, not in an audible voice, but spoke to my heart and said, "Set my daughters free." And I wrote the second edition in response to that. And it is geared toward Christian women. A lot of the other books that I have written are geared toward unbelievers, but this one is specifically geared toward Christian women, specifically women who have been given the gifts of leadership or preaching, who are not allowed to use their gifts. So I wrote it in response to that prompting from God to set his daughters free. And the second edition, it took like all the material from the first book, but I added a lot more onto it, specifically stories of women in the past who pursued their calling in spite of tremendous opposition from the organized religions, and then some modern women, including yourself, who are living out their calling. So it's an expanded version, and in my opinion, a better version of the first edition. The other female pastor that I interviewed after I interviewed you, we actually just finished up her story. It kind of got I interviewed her and then it got put on hold because of something going on in her life. And then we got back to it and bounced it back and forth a few times and just finished it up. So I'm hoping to get that to the publisher fairly soon.
Wow. When you did it the first time, when you wrote the first edition, did you do research? Like, what
Oh,
was involved
yeah.
in that whole process? And then did you have to redo some of that?
The research that I had done pre and yes, to answer your question, yes, I did a lot of research. I always do a lot of research. I didn't redo the research. I did some additional research, but the basic that I did research on women in ministry, and the most important book that contributed, that helped me understand the whole issue of gender equality in the Christian church is a book. It's called What Paul Really Said About Women, and it's written by a man named John Temple Bristow. Are you familiar with him?
So a little bit.
He was a professor at Wheaton College in Illinois. What his book said, he read the letters of Paul, which is a lot of what Paul wrote, is what keeps women out of pulpits and leadership roles. And he read Paul's letters in the Greek that Paul wrote them in. And then he showed how, when men were translating his letters, Paul's letters, they changed his wording to support their worldview rather than accurately translating Paul's words. That was the main piece of evidence, or the main piece of research that I did. Though I did read several other books along the same topics, one by Sarah Sumner, one by J. Lee Grady, oh, one by Gilbert Bilezikian called Beyond
Oh, yeah.
Sex Roles.
Yeah, I read that book. That's a good one.
Those are the books that I did, that I wrote, and I quote various portions of them in my writing to show that I'm not just pulling this stuff out of air. Have read people who are experts in this and very knowledgeable in this.
Yeah, those are some good books. Like I said, I read the Beyond Gender Roles.
And Men and Women in the Church by Sarah Sumner.
When you wrote it the first time, and now, of course, you're writing the second edition, I know that you talked about who you're hoping to reach. What are you hoping will happen? Like, what do you think the inspiration will be, or the result of, or for those who are reading it?
Well, I'm hoping that I can help people think about this whole issue with an open mind and not just what they were taught growing up in their church or in their family, but to really examine it and think about it and look at it from different sides. And I actually, just the other day, I met with a woman who's the director of a women's ministry here near me. And we were talking about this, and she does not support gender equality in the church and believes that women should not teach men and women should not preach from the pulpit. And I told her about John Temple Bristow's book and some of the other research that I've done. And she was like, well, a lot of it is open to interpretation and people have their own viewpoints and we have to agree to disagree. And all I said to her is like, well, they both cannot be correct. One of them is right. It's not, they both can't be right because they're opposing viewpoints. When we didn't come to any resolution, but since my manuscript is still not quite done, I asked her if I could email her the manuscript, and she said yes. And I said, I will only email it to you if you want to read it. If you don't want to read it, I'm not going to email it to you. And she said no, she wanted to read it. So I emailed it to her and I just asked her to read it with an open mind. And I also, a couple of weeks ago, I was on vacation in North Carolina with my family and we rented a beach house. And it just so happens that in the beach house right next to us was a Southern Baptist preacher, a male preacher. And I told him about my writing and asked him if I could send him the manuscript. And he said yes. And when I didn't have my laptop with me. And when I got home, I sent him the manuscript and I just attached a note and said, I hope you read it with an open mind. I'm just trying to influence people's thinking because I believe that through all the research that I did for When the Glass Ceiling is Stained, I really believe that God is gender blind and that he doesn't gift people according to their genders. And I'm hoping to influence people's thinking to help people become more gender blind or racially blind or whatever, and just see each other as human beings, not as men or women or black or white or brown or yellow, just human beings. And I'm hoping that eventually, and I do not expect this to happen in my lifetime, the Christian church can get to the point where it will help people develop their gifts and encourage people to live out their God-given purpose, regardless of what gender they are. And there are some churches that do that. I'm not saying that all Christian churches have a stained glass ceiling because I know that's not true. I just happen to keep running into the churches that do have one. I guess through all my writing, I'm just trying to influence people's thinking.
Yeah, I totally understand that. And I think that as many voices as possible, the better. Like, you know what I mean? The more the better. I mean, I think there was a time where I would have probably said, you know, well, we have this book or we have that or whatever, we have that book. But I think I have come to the other side of it now in the last few years of saying, no, I think the more people we have saying the same thing, even if it's slightly different way in slightly different ways, is really what we need. We need to, like almost like a chorus of people saying the same things of, you know, revisit the scriptures, relook, you know, look and see. You can't have multiple passages of scripture that are affirming women in leadership and then allow that, oh, there's only two places, you know, two or three places that would say women shouldn't be leading or preaching. And those upset the, you know, everything else, especially when we allow Paul to override Jesus. That's really when I get, that's really when it concerns me. When we let anybody else, any other voices override Jesus, then I start getting concerned, you know.
I also, in the book, I also say, I live by the motto, actions speak louder than words. And when I look at the scriptures, and I'm not going to argue with people over how to interpret this or how to interpret that, I look at people's actions, Jesus's actions, Paul's actions, Peter's actions, And they all affirmed women serving in ministry and saw them as co-partners in ministry. So if you look at the actions and not argue about the words, I think it's pretty clear what the message is.
Oh yeah, absolutely, right?
Right.
they were all laboring alongside one another. I've said more than once, if we really believe that this is important, why would we have half of the team sitting on the bench, right? Why
Right.
wouldn't we have everyone on the team playing? So do you think you have any more writing projects?
At this point, I would say no. Once I finish this book up, I don't have anything that's, burning a hole in my brain, or I don't have anything else that's churning around inside me. At this point, no. If God lays something on my heart that He wants me to write about, I'll write about it. Other than that, this might be it for my writing career. This will be the seventh book that will be out on Amazon, because right now I have six books that are available for purchase. And once this one is done, there'll be seven. And I don't know if there's going to be an eighth. I'm kind of thinking probably not. So, but I don't know. Who knows? I'm not going to close the door on that possibility, but I'm also not going to count on writing another one.
I mean, who knows, right? As when you hit publish, God might start knocking on your door again, right?
He might, or he might, I might just throw my time and energy and resources into promoting what I've already written.
Right?
I might do that. I'm not really sure, to be honest with you. I'm really not sure.
I didn't get to read the first edition, so I'm excited to read the second edition. One of the things I often ask my guests are, for women in ministry, whether they're new, like they're just starting to answer the call to ministry, or maybe they've been in a while, any words of advice or encouragement you might have for them, especially coming out of, even if it's coming out of your book that your second edition of your book.
I wasn't called to ministry as far as like the traditional ministry roles like you were. I was called to lead the Celebrate Recovery ministry and called to write. And I guess all I would say is don't give up in spite of the opposition. There is going to be opposition, and depending on who you are and where you are, that might be pretty fierce opposition. I live in a very, very traditional conservative community, so the opposition can be quite strong. And I have chosen to listen to the voice inside of me, rather than to all the voices outside of me that keeps trying to shut me up. So I would just say, don't give up and push through the opposition, because in the end, hopefully we're all living our lives for an audience of one. And when what I keep thinking about myself is when I stand before God someday, he's going to ask me, what did you do with the gifts I gave you? And I want to be able to answer it in that I used them to the fullest capacity I possibly could. And I don't think if I said, well, my pastor wouldn't let me use it, I don't really think that's going to fly. I really don't. I would just say push on and trust God and trust whatever messages you get from Him.
That's good advice. That's good advice. Yeah. We have to find a way. We have to find a way forward. If God's calling us, He'll help us to find a way forward, or bring somebody else alongside of us to help us walk through that door. Thank you so much for coming on here and sharing all of this and sharing your story. Is there anything else in your story that you wanted to share that might help the listeners?
There's nothing that I can think of off the top of my head other than what I've already said about don't let yourself get derailed by opposition. If God is calling you to do something and has gifted you to do it, He wants you to do it.